Welcome to the sixth episode of Jalasi Mi'kma'ki, a bilingual Mi'kmaq and English podcast. I am your host, Annie Claire. Upjali Datniya Sixinamuk sixth episode Uchit Jalasi Mi'kma'ki, Ula bilingual Mi'kmaq a Adlasiyeli podcast, Anindelwisi, Annie Claire. Coming up on the sixth episode, we talk about basket making. Mi'kmaq artists have become well known across Canada for their basket making skills. But it's been a long and complicated road between artistic respect and survival. We'll talk to non-native elders who remember the days of Mi'kmaq people going door-to-door in the Maritimes selling baskets.
There were Indians, whom we would now call Mi'kmaq, camped out on her father's property, which would be my grandfather. His name was Harris York, and that was here in Parsborough. And they were making baskets.
The first Mi'kmaq person I ever saw, I didn't really actually see him, because he was walking down the streets in Kensington, PEI, with probably 35 or 40 baskets tied together. He was inside the basket.
Well, Diane, in Gizidwan, I got out again, and I got them. Wow. Sometimes we don't like this, the swat is not so well, but it's so well, not penny.
We have many words in Mi'kmaq to describe baskets and the basket making process. According to the Mi'kmaq Online Dictionary, a basket is a
likpenigan.
The ash plates that make up the basket are called
likpedeganabi.
The hoops of the basket is called a
logistan.
To pound the ash tree into splints, we say
elikpedeget.
When we cut strips of ash for basket making, we say
eldarsewet.
We even have a word for tucking in the flaps while making a basket. It's
demakjodok.
The language shows that basket making is important to us. But we haven't been making baskets forever. In fact, historians suggest that we only started making baskets out of trees such as black ash in the 1700s. Settlers were pushing into our lands, restricting our access to our traditional necessities. Our livelihoods were changing rapidly, and one of the few ways open to us to make money was to sell baskets to the settlers. For the rich American tourist, we made intricate fancy baskets. For the potato trade in Maine and Prince Edward Island, we made potato baskets. But let's start at the start. How do you turn a black ash tree into a basket? Let's listen to our first guest, Eldon Hanning, a Mi'kmaq ash harvester and a basket maker from Houlton, Maine.
Can you tell us your name and where you're from?
My name is Eldon Hanning. I'm from Houlton, Maine.
Can you describe the process of preparing an ash tree for basket work?
Well, you split the wood, you split the log, like you would firewood. You know, you split the log the whole length. Then you split that quarter, or that half in the quarter. Then you take out the heart. And then after that, you split those quarters down. Then you take out the heart of that, each one of those. And then you split the, what I call the white, down. And that's how you prepare it for hewing it out.
Can you tell me where you learned to do this process?
I learned it from my mother, Elizabeth Hanning. Her maiden name was Knockwood.
Where was she from as well?
She was from Lennox Island, PEI.
Are ash trees becoming more difficult to find?
Not for me.
Can you tell me more about the ash?
Well, right at the moment, we have an invasive bug called the emerald ash borer that's coming into southern Maine. And what's happening is it's killing off the ash trees, the white, brown, the green. If it's an ash tree, it's attacking it and killing the ash off. Right now, it's moving up into Maine from New Hampshire.
So how long have you been doing this?
I've been making baskets for about 35 years.
Do you teach others learn to prepare the ash trees for basket making?
Once in a great while. Like I'll show my nephews, how to go in the woods, find the trees, cut them, and prepare the logs, right? I just more or less showed my nephews, and but I do, as far as getting the, you know, getting the trees, I show them where to go get them. But as far as preparing them, I'll do demos on splitting the log down, hewing it out, and pounding it at basket workshop and basket sales. I'll do that, right? Preparing the logs from the log to the splint, I do that.
So is there anything else that you would like to share that we forgot?
Just that it's a dying art. Not that many people is doing it anymore. Young people that used to, I used to sell logs to Eastport, right, down in Princeton and, you know, in Pleasant Point, and they'd pound them out down there for their basket makers, but they're not making that many. Basket makers are getting farther and farther between them, you know. The old basket makers are dying off, and the young ones, the problem with them is that they think they know everything and really doesn't listen to, you know, a seasoned basket maker, you know. Oh, I can go out and find my trees. I can go out and get my logs anywhere as I want them. But the thing is, you got to have permission to go on the land and cut. You know, you got to go get permission from the landowner to go on his property to go cut ash. And a lot of young people don't realize that. They just figure, well, I can go cut anywhere as I want. I'm a Native American, and I can go cut wherever I want. They can't. They have to understand that you get permission to go cut, and the farmers will let you cut. You know, they're willing to let you cut. And in return, just they may want a couple of clothes baskets or maybe a couple of potato baskets, you know. But it's hard to make anyone understand, you know. And then you go on state land and you get permission from the state to go and cut land, right, or cut on their land. You get an ash permit and you get more ash. You get a permit to cut 10 cord. And nobody's going to use 10 cord of wood in 1 year as far as ash, you know, unless it's a really big operation, you know, where you're making thousands of baskets. So
have you ever tried to come to New Brunswick and try to see if you can find some here?
No, because I only cut not really that many trees or logs. I only cut about 250 logs a year because I get to prepare my wood, and I also sell wood to Eastport, down to Princeton, down to Orono and Old Town, and I sell to some people in Sydney, and I sell into Cape Breton Island and PEI and different areas like that.
Yeah, so the area of Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, it's hard to find ash trees, right?
Well, yeah, they say it's hard to find, and a lot of these people that is getting the ash from me, I ask them about if they know how to use maple, and some of the older ones, they say, yeah, they know how to use maple, you know, but they'd rather have ash, you know, and I have to turn around and I prepare the log, like, split them down, hew them out, pound them, put them in the rolls, I'll come over and buy it, take it back over. Better, you know, it's because you can't take logs across the border. It's easier for them to buy the splints than it is to try to get the logs across without the bark on them, guys. You got to have paper that says where you got the log, the landowner, and all this and that.
All right, then. Thank you, Eldon, for your time.
For more great videos of Eldon and other Mi'kmaq basket makers in Maine, check out the Hudson Museum YouTube channel. My next guest is my own daughter-in-law, Ashley's son and past Claire. Whenever I visit Ashley, she's always making something, whether it's beadwork or quill work or making baskets. Ashley is proud of having learned these skills from her grandparents. Let's listen to her share her story of making baskets in the old-fashioned way.
My name is Ashley Sunny Pass, and I'm from Indian Island, and I'm 30 years old.
My first question is, why did you decide to make baskets?
I decided to make baskets because I've always seen my gran making baskets, and there wasn't a lot of people in my family that knew how, so I wanted to carry on that tradition of basket making, and so I had asked her to help me make baskets. But one of her rules was that I had to go out and get the ash in order for me to learn how to make the baskets.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that, about baskets?
When I first started, it was a square basket that I did, and that was a simple weave. Like, you go over and under and over and under. Well, when you're doing a circle basket, I find it's a lot more difficult. And the way we make our circle baskets is it has a top. So when I start doing my basket and making my weave going around in a circle, I go out as wide as I want my bottom to be. And then I start bending up the ash all around the corners so that it's facing up. Then I start my weave with a separate piece and I start going around. And in order to hold that in place, I put another ash piece there that's hard and smaller so that it just keeps it down, like tucked in. And then I continue going all the way around. And then I put it, I go over the strip that I, where I started, and it's hidden behind ash piece that's going up so that you don't see it. And then I keep going. And when I get to the top where the rim is, I use a harder piece of wood, which is would be like a maple. That's what we use. So we put maple at the rim and we put sweet grass there. And then we crisscross a smaller, slim piece around to hold it in place.
What inspired you to make baskets?
The inspiration came from my grandmother, really. And I see baskets all over Unamagi going to powwows, and I noticed that not a lot of young people were making baskets. And I wanted to be one of those people to be able to teach others how to do that. So I wanted to teach. That was one of my inspirations. And I wanted to learn from my grandmother, who was making, she's been making baskets for over 79 years. That's how long she's been making baskets. And to think that she started making baskets when she was 7, and she learned from her mom, and I didn't pick it up until I was about 20, 24. That's when I actually made my first basket. So my inspiration was to teach others how to do it. It was to learn it, and to learn it from my grandmother.
What materials do you use to make your baskets, and were there any other rules about?
When my grandmother taught me how to make baskets, she wanted me to do it in a way that was old. So you'll notice some baskets out there, they use glue, they'll use little nails, they'll also use molds and things to help them. But when she taught me how to make a basket, she wanted me to do it in a way that was difficult so that if I don't have those tools around me, I'll still know how to make them. So when she taught me how to make the basket, I had to hold the basket together and use other pieces of wood to keep it in place. And I couldn't use anything to weave around. So I had to sort of hold it in my lap and against my body. And that was one of her rules, because she didn't want me to take an easy way. And another rule I remember that she had was to start small. And you'll notice that small baskets are a lot harder to do than bigger baskets. So when I first started making them, and I know one of my other cousins too, it was little tiny baskets that we had to do. It wasn't easy. It was difficult. So we couldn't use anything like a clothespin to hold it in place, or an elastic or nothing like that. So it was done in an older way. So the tools that I had used was just the wood, the sweet grass, and a pair of scissors.
What do you get from making these baskets in a spiritual, or how it makes you feel?
Spiritually, I feel more connected to my ancestors, because this is something that has been passed down in my family for generations. And when I sit there and make a basket, I feel closer to them. And sometimes I could even actually see my great-grandmothers sitting there making baskets in my mind when I'm sitting there. It's as if they're sitting next to me, or as if they're watching me and critiquing what I'm doing. I see that in my mind as I'm doing it. I feel grateful that I learned how to do it from my grandmother, and that it's something that is passed down in our family. You'll notice that different baskets from different families are made differently. There's a lot of difference in that, but for instance, maybe a family in Cape Breton make their baskets in a way that's like a fan in the middle. The way I was taught by my grandmother how to make baskets was a cross. So you start with a cross and then you put one in between there to make an X. So there's different ways to start your bottom. And you'll notice that different families have different ways that they start their bottoms.
Is there a reason why you guys add sweetgrass to the baskets?
The way I was taught about sweetgrass was there's certain parts of it that are stronger, the middle piece. And lots of times when you're peeling a sweetgrass, there's one piece that's always right in the center that they call the heart of the grass, and it's the strongest piece. So they like to use those for ceremonial purposes. And then there's other pieces that they would use as tools to make their baskets or to put in their beds to keep them warm. So there's, but still, it's still significant. Like it's, that piece isn't more valuable than the middle. It's just, they say that that stem is strongest smelling and just stronger, eh? So the sweetgrass, when we put it in our baskets, it's, I guess that's just always how our family did it. I wasn't really told why we use sweetgrass in it, but it's just, that's the way that they were always taught to do it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, Alin Ashley, McDonald ma uchid la podcast on the Aldadoks of upchalasimigmagi.wordpress.com. PJILASIMIKMAKI.wordpress.com. Again, the Aldadoks of Kasnam Delwisit Sandra Risin, Negamelda o Lee Pennigan, at Lewi Dilsibuktu, at Negamgiziv Tudeg of Award. Dan gizi ilda ol Lick Pendigan.
Hello, Nindewisi Sandra Racine, Claire Oya one time, Pazagizi Malie Wea. Glewi Ilzabuktuk First Nation, Wiginigan Nova Scotia, Mahome Bay.
Gislimidis Dan Dojisak gizi dying old moon basketsel.
3 years ago, Abiji School Oya, Naish, Ajigina Maya Buchidaish, Ulnuwea. Sige dandelo team ko one time ga ta 2 years course still out of ego na grugina maya bai ta usigina dam grugina ma si ap dandeli duno lai lappenigan baskilo ta usigina daish ajigina maya ap nega moya ajigina maya me bubol ta si quills la gina sisku dandela duno chi si padri ata bubol ta biluwe gina maya mau dandelu uti dandelo team ko one time ga so koi.
The middle ginama is about when ginamaskas.
Middle ginama ya by Frederick Dunkaish, MBCCD, New Brunswick College in Craft and Design. Giginamo ya by Charlie Gaffney, Leo with Malizi Dua Jaish Tobi. Plus giginamo ya by is Lapegin Dandeli Duno Laish 8 standards. Was na rest daish. Anspanning giginamas yap die. Deladun rest. Akatimaban sa awel Lapegin. Was o adestuaban, gegina maya panadana kataman, negamoi, emi majukwadam up dan gigamanu dan delu yul do diban one time, nandelariga negamoi, nevaji, ginamas yabnin on my own, no tigina maya.
Koi materials nudas of dan nudan gil eoman oldun basketsel.
Wiskoe, nadeluis black ash, maktawe, wiskoe eomnin, sigo eom, my sweet grass. Not really, elmo go me biluay, bilua mo buksu, but mostly ay black ash. Askoy.
Akoy tusl elman.
Gauges. Klamuksi Louis Claro, na klamuksi sa na nega mo tusl mo laloda al. Selena Simono u tusl mo laloda al gauges. Uchi demsaman nai wiskoe. Shave wadu wiskoe na lada Uncle Louis stuff. Alalik ash pounder Uncle Louis oil. Peter Jeter said we skimmin negamo oil. So dabunki gay ash pounder. Nige mugisi ewa me kaza mwekunumu room uchidaish danda tigates nudayesh garage or something like that dangistilugwas.
Dalek imawadun ash uchidik basket mula medwe.
Medwe nige dandelim kunumin dead maweji do Nova Scotia. Mariah me Quebec in Maine and Adel Nawajadun. Nada eish. alai la juji jai wajia china or something like that. Delu is it emerald ash bore? Na meduai nige aish nige na wiskoe weji kas ma umari laish kumujo laish juji na nigamo kaish it leo la la diji kumujo na nige best time nige na aish springtime mawadu nigamo ya all through the spring got summer aish mawodai.
Go igi wajigan tambojo elduinal basketal sige nige spiritual gnetangil delfilowin.
Well, then, in Gizituan, I got out again, and I got them, wow, in Gizadnet. Sometimes, we didn't like this, the swat is not sa oil, ekunaman, eh, but a sa oil, lapenigan, ekunaman. Now, I got to this, then they'll look at me one time, it then they'll do even. Nanako, up just nimit this, Nanegamo, and was she inspiration, messing from Gigamanu, Gaish, then it'll do even one time. Na biluate sap ni nako e na kisa ga adigan na munego delwa unin designer luas kigmanu kisi tu di ba one time at tel tega ban na pasa kishka istua do an ni na mila so de man pasa nego e credit igina ma e gaish our ancestors
ekumanako e dango ya guru ya adun dan mun maskur muku
dai wajik swaro ab ni nula uldun basketo ni na lappeni kandelwi de modilo na entu gaish tandeli daigo molni moine mo down eldo amya igna mudugina mo amo gwen ka siba de modi shuk swaro sin naish mijip juwa an naish kes na dandli banketo go ya ta mudugina mo ai gitti nin na negmo e muni gesaremo nin na gurugina mo we gurugina ma e mijuaji gurugina ma e majuino kisigo majuino e mudi bene this summer guys back to span it'll look up 6 weeks na kisigo majuino it'll maludi e gabene na ya biji dajin class am luoda na det nin gurui but I guess I'm dollo we gula ga e wanda swati mudi dandeli duri ban one time eh? Na sige refresher igina ma abane na bana good time of year 6 weeks I'll do a go basketball na negamoi na krusia wad ni na krusia ginamoi as far as I could that's my goal
ginamo basak ulnu kesa ma adlasio
magical dot when mostly ulnu karaguru ginama ignin karo pisquash when at lo madlima ulnu gil luish mo na magical dot really cuz ajidup ni don't really don't ginamo yak ulnu nin dandelian kidai nin kinenoi naula kinuwaish Chupi siawad no magunjanina. That's my belief.
Walali.
Walali not nin.
Check out images of Sandra's work at www.mi'kmawovendreams.com. The basket has combined two worlds, that of the Mi'kmaq people and that of the settlers. Where so often there would be no opportunities for interaction. Selling baskets provided an important lifeline to the Mi'kmaq people. In some cases, friendships between the colonizers and the colonized even developed. Let's listen to Harriet McCready, a lifelong resident of Ta'amigushk, otherwise known as Parsborough, Nova Scotia. In this interview, she traces the origins of a Mi'kmaq basket she inherited from her aunt.
My name is Harriet McCready, and I am living in Parsborough. I grew up here. I'm 67 years old.
Can you tell me about the story of the basket that was passed on to you?
My aunt, who was born here, her name was Lois York, and she married a Greenough and moved to the valley near Windsor. And on one occasion when I was visiting her, and this was much later in her life, she was probably in her late 70s or 80s, she showed me the basket, and she told me that it was given to her when she was a small girl, that there were Indians, whom we would now call Mi'kmaq, camped out on her father's property, which would be my grandfather. His name was Harris York. And that was here in Parsborough. They were making baskets. And so they made three baskets. And the oldest girl got the biggest basket. And the next girl got the next biggest basket. And this basket was given to her. She was the smallest of the three girls. She was born in 1919. I believe that she told me she was probably 10 or maybe 12. So that means the basket was probably made around 1929, 30, 31, thereabouts. And I asked her why they were there. She didn't really recall. She said, I wish I had known to ask more questions, but she said her assumption was that it was a place where they could easily gather the materials they needed to make the baskets. I don't know how many people were there, but it sounded like there were a few, for sure. And she kept the basket and treasured it her whole life. After she died, she had no children, so myself and a cousin were the ones who were closest to her in her later life, and I was attached to her, and she made me her executor. So after the appraisal was done and I was trying to make sure that all of her things were distributed properly, she had told me she wanted to make sure that everybody got something to keep as a memento or a memory of her. I decided that the little basket was something that I would like to have. So that's what I chose for myself.
What were your interactions with the Mi'kmaq people in your childhood growing up?
My earliest memories were of two men who used to regularly come and visit my father. Well, even before that, I was told that my father's Indian friends taught him how to skate, that they lived probably 7, 8, 10 miles away from here, and they would come down and they would all skate on what we call the Abato, the little river that runs through Powersboro. And then later, I remember as a child, two men named Denny Paul and Noel Paul. One was the uncle to the other, but I don't remember which was which. And they would come usually once a year to visit my father, especially when they were in town for the Old Home Week. Was quite a big event in those days, and there were all these outdoor-type contests. The one I remember most was kettle boiling, but there were wood sawing and all those other kinds of things. But they would come quite regularly, and they would always win the contest because they were very good at it. They would get their fire going quickly and get a kettle to boil. But they would come and sit with my father outside on the doorstep. It was this house, actually, but it was quite different then. And there was just a platform outside this back door. My mother would make them tea, and they would sit and talk and smoke. I was always intrigued by them, but I was a little child, and children didn't intervene in the parents' conversations in those days. I know that we had other baskets around, and again, my impression is that that these were baskets that my mother bought from the Mi'kmaq people who were selling them. I remember very well her clothes basket, which was what all the babies were kept in when they were really little, and I'm almost certain that was made by natives in the area. I can't say for sure, but it's an impression that I have, and it would have been very common for that to be the case, because who else would be making baskets and selling them? In fact, I have another basket. I will get it and show it to you.
Can you tell us about today?
Well, my interest in the Native people, I think it started with the media coverage of the problems at Oka, and I began to realize that I knew so little. Of course, we learned what all the kids did growing up in school, and I began to realize that a lot we didn't know. And later, my daughter was very interested in the Native people and their concerns, and she was living near Caledonia in Ontario, and so I would learn from her about some of the things that were happening when houses were being built on land that was still in dispute and so on. So I started, you know, paying a little more attention and feeling that I wanted to learn a bit more about the people that we shared this land with in our early times, feeling a great sense of injustice that had been perpetrated on the Native people. And then, of course, the issue around fracking came up. Well, it seemed to me to be a very important thing to do what little bit I could, to pay attention and to be supportive if I could. And so that was the next opportunity for me to get to know a bit more about people. And then I became so impressed by what the people at El Spoktok were doing, the sacrifices they were making to challenge this awful thing that was coming. And that's kind of where it is.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's our episode for this week. Thanks to all our guests, and thank you for tuning in. Until we meet again, keep learning the language. Walalio, dandel siksirmo, adalju umududio, saugina mai dandel iomuisin. Nemultas.